The other quality I'd like to just draw to your attention to in that same scene is the quality I've called here for you, a clarity. Purity is a word we're familiar with. It's the same word in Latin, same word in English too. Clarity might just give it a different edge. Love, I think myself that the most important quality of love, I suppose they're also important, but let me say, is clarity. That you're clear when you love, that you don't confuse people when you love, that your love is clear and received as given, and you know what you're doing and the other person can know. Now that's a life achievement we're talking about there, aren't we? Because it's just hard to be clear, it's hard to be pure, we get confused. But Jesus wasn't. His love seemed, well, it did reach people with a clarity that they, if they didn't like it, they crucified him. If they liked it, if they let it in, if they let it show up what was the cobwebs and the mess that they were in, but allowed themselves to be taken in by him and loved by him and healed by him, then they found a whole new journey, a whole new innocence and a whole new sanctity. He himself said very beautifully once, "Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God." And in that scene of Jesus and the woman, he saw God in her. She must have been forgiven, or she couldn't love so much. And when he saw God there, he saw that she didn't have any problems, really. The people who had the problems were the people around her. All he had to do was release her from their judgment and release her from her own self-judgment in order to see the amount of love that was in her life so that she could get up and move again and not need to be distracted into prostitution, but could really love and be loved. Jesus had a pure love that was able to see that, and she, looking into his eyes, could see that he saw it. His love was so pure that it convinced her. She could see nothing but the clarity that was there and knew that he was seeing something, and she could see it reflected in his eyes, her own self, her true self, the woman who was a great lover and who will become a saint. Well, I'd like to now look with you at the fourth portrait of Jesus I'd like to present to you, and that is on the last night of Jesus' life. And it's the scene of Jesus at the Last Supper when he washes his disciples' feet. It's a terribly ordinary, everyday, simple scene. But being ordinary and everyday, we often miss the lovely revelations of ordinary life, don't we? And this most unextraordinary scene says something about love that was typical of Jesus. He got up from table, he removed his outer garment, and taking a towel, he wrapped it round his waist, and he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the disciples' feet and wipe them with the towel he was wearing. It sounds ordinary, and perhaps nothing would have been even recorded, except that Peter kicked up a shindy about it and said, "You're not going to do it to me." And then Jesus realized what was going on in Pete's mind. Pete was thinking, you know, "You shouldn't be washing my feet, because you're the important person." And it's true, in his society, that the master would never wash the feet of the servant. It was a normal thing for the servant to do. Every servant did it. It belonged to their culture. Let's leave it just as it is. They had servants and they did it. We've got the equivalent in our culture. But they had that. That was their practice. And everyone just absolutely took it for granted. Except Jesus. And when people's feet were dusty, if no one else thought of it first, and he seemed to be pretty quick at thinking of things like this, he just got up, put a towel around, and started to wash people's feet. And most of them just shoved their feet out and got them washed and went on with eating what they were eating. Until Peter kind of... And here's Peter again. There's a worry here, because, see, Peter's kind of the leader of the group, isn't he? And when Jesus dies, who's going to be your father superior? Who's going to be the bishop? Who's going to be in charge when Jesus goes? Peter. And if Peter doesn't get the message about this, Peter's going to start expecting people to, not with any bad will, no, don't. It's for other people's humility, and it's good for them, and they need training, and it's all fairly, what are we all giggling about? It's all very serious, and that's obvious, and Peter would be doing them a favour by letting them wash his feet, but Jesus isn't into that, is he? If I don't wash your feet, Peter, here's this zealous lover again. If I don't wash your feet, Peter, I will have no part with you. He's only got tonight. If he doesn't get this message through tonight, it's finished. The whole thing's crumpled, and he's disappointed enough without having to live with that. So he just says to Peter, Pete, this is the parting of the ways. I wash your feet, or let's say goodbye now. That's tough words. That's love. And Peter gets the message, and he never forgot it. You'll find it in his own letter later. How would you forget a message like that? Oh, well, he said, in that case, you can wash me all over. I don't want to kind of go, if it's as important as that, I'll listen to you. It was as important, and it was revolutionary stuff we're talking about here. Jesus loved like a child. He told us, unless you become like a little child, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. You won't even know what love is unless you do it like a child, with your eyes open, wonder, and seeing it as a privilege to love. You're the one who goes away feeling great because you've been so privileged to be able to care for these people, and you get such a kick out of it. And you know you do. And you're going for kicks. If I can put it that way. You're loving them because it's such a terrific thing to do. If it's not that terrific for you to do it, I don't know whether you should be or I should be. I think you better wait and realize what a bad lover you are. Maybe. I don't know. Am I saying too much? I might be. But Jesus, when he loved like a child. He loved from underneath. He loved, he served. He was a humble person. I'm humble of heart. He got joy out of loving. And that other dramatic scene that brings it out, when the woman who was an adulteress, remember, John chapter 8, isn't it? And the Pharisees bring this woman in and just throw her, stand, they don't throw her, just, she stands there in front of Jesus. And they start to say, what do we do with her? Would you stone her or what do we do? And they're looking down on this woman, obviously, for what she's done. And do you notice what Jesus does? He goes down. He doesn't stand up. He gets down on the ground and starts to, and he looks up at the woman. And there's some symbolism in that, isn't there? Like a little child has to look up. He looks up at her. And then when they all go away, it says Jesus looked up to her. Of course he looked up to her. He looked up to everybody. Really, looked up to everybody. That's the Jesus that the gospel people knew. He looked up to Peter, and Peter thought, how can he possibly look up to me? Look at who I am and look at who he is. But he's a lover, and lovers look up to people. He looked up to the woman and said, well, if they're not condemning you, he said, I'm not condemning you. I'm not condemning you. Go sin no more. And that lovely childlike quality of love enabled that woman to realize it got through to her, whereas a proud love, there is no such thing, would not have touched her. Further quality of love, the fifth scene is in the agony of the garden, where we read, after that supper, they came to a small estate called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, stay here while I pray. And he took Peter and James and John with him. That's the quality I just want you to look at. And a sudden fear came over him, says Mark, using one of the strongest Greek expressions of what you get when you get a breakdown, when your nerves go, when your body starts to shake and you've got no control over it. When you haven't, and that's the word they're using there, it's a sudden, he's kind of been holding it, he's been coping very well, and he's been loving, and he's been speaking words, and he's been doing all that we see him do during the Last Supper, but when he gets into the garden, his body, his nerves give way, and he breaks under it. A sudden fear came over him, and great distress. It is a breakdown, if you may use that word. That is that. And he said, my soul is sorrowful to the point of death. Wait here. Keep awake. Love is a communion thing. And that's what I'd like to meditate with you on in this scene. Jesus was not the lover, he was the beloved as well. You can't give love without receiving it, can you? Love, if there's no receiving going on, there's no loving going on, because it is not a one-way thing, it's a communion thing. And whenever I love you, I must be open to your love, I must give you myself and allow you to give yourself to me, otherwise I'm not loving you, whatever name I give it. Because we are made in the image of God, lover. Love is in the image of God. And let's think of that for a minute. How am I made in the image of God? Because God is the love giver. God is the one who creates people by his love. And so when I love you, I am like God. When you love me, you are like God. When we love each other, we are like God in that we give life by loving. Yes. And it's a beautiful thing to love because we are God-like when we love. But what a beautiful gift it is for me to give you to allow you to love me, because then I'm making you God-like, aren't I? I'm recognizing God in you. I'm allowing you to love me. Therefore, I am making you in the image of God, and letting you see that you, I need you. Jesus must have made Peter and James and John, mind you, they fell asleep and they got overwhelmed and they couldn't cope and all that thing, that's the human thing. But what a lovely gift it was for Jesus. Just picture yourself. I mean, we can't, perhaps, but yeah, I can easily see myself saying, look, God, I don't want anyone around me at this time, and going away on your own. And Jesus can't cope on his own this night. So he says to Peter, James and John, come with me. I need you. And what a lovely gift it was that they never forgot how he needed them there. Jesus' whole loving was about communion, about giving and receiving, about being in love, lest we become like the benefactor that he spoke about in that other scene at the Last Supper, who lord it over people by our loving, who are the givers, who are the people who are needed, who are building ourselves up into God, really. Making ourselves like Adam, wanting to be like God, and so we're the ones that people need, and we're the ones that have to be on the committee, and we're the ones that have to be the secretary, treasurer, or whatever else we have to be, and people need us desperately, and they're all in such need of me. It all sounds so sick and crazy, but does anyone not do it in the room? So we behave, and Jesus was not like that at all. It was a giving, a life-giving love, and the test of life-giving love is that it's willing to let the ebb and flow occur and to need the other one as well. If anyone loves me, Jesus knew about communion from his own experience. If he loves me, Jesus wanted love. If he loves me, you'll keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we'll come to him, and we'll make our home in him. Jesus loved making homes. I mean, he wanted to make the whole world a home. And that's a kind of an excited verse, isn't it? Like, I'll come and I'll bring me mates and we'll all settle in here, and, you know, it's a kind of everyone's going to be there. And Jesus' mate is God, if you don't mind me. And my Father will love him, and we'll come and we'll make our home in him. And his last prayer of John is about communion, union with people. May they all be one, Father. May they be one in us, as you are in me and I am in you. In a mutual giving and receiving of love, which we call the Spirit. The Spirit is the Spirit of the Father and the Son in mutual communion of giving and receiving and responding. As you are in me and I am in you, so the world may believe that it was you who sent me. I have given them the glory you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, with me in them and you in me. I have made you known to them, and I'll continue to make you known, so that the love with which you love me may be in them, so that I may be in them. And the last scene that I want to place before you of Jesus is the crucifixion, obviously, which is the final statement of Jesus' love. We will, of course, spend a whole 2 hours on this at a later lecture. We'll have to, of course. I just want to touch on it now, to draw out a couple more qualities or dimensions of Jesus' love. That's Mark's account in chapter 15, verse 34. Just the portrait that Mark has painted here of the last moment of Jesus' life. And what was revealed there was love, but there are some qualities of love in it that we need made contemplate and so. At the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi," he went back to his mother tongue, Aramaic, is "Eloi, my God, lama sabachthani, why have you deserted me?" Some of those who stood by heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling on Elijah." But Jesus gave a loud cry and gave forth his pneuma, his spirit, breathed his last, breathed forth his breath, life breath. Breathed it forth, of course, to his Father. "Into your hands I commit my spirit, my breath." And we're told two things. The veil of the temple was torn from top to bottom. And the centurion who was standing in front of him and seen the manner of his dying. Very important. Saw how he died. He said, "In truth, this man was a son of God." In there is the essence of our theology about the redemption on the cross. It is sometimes said that Jesus redeemed us because he died. I believe that that needs to be radically rethought and rephrased. Death doesn't redeem anybody. Be that centurion. The centurion had seen a million deaths. Well, not a million, but you know what I'm trying to say. It was his job. What he saw and what stunned him and astonished him was how he died. That's the key. It was the way he died that released something in that centurion and on you and me if we want to watch. It was the love with which he died. It was the peace with which he died. It was the courage and all the qualities we've tried to look at here tonight. And as we look at that, let's look at some of the qualities of love that death on the cross shows. In other words, what if you stand with the centurion, what do you see about love when you look at him on the cross? Well, there's three things I want to say to you that I see there, and there'd be many more. The first is the unselfishness of love. And I want to spend a few moments with you on that. His love is not about himself. It's a love for others. It's a self-giving. That's a better word than unselfish in a way, isn't it? Because unselfish are two negatives stuck in there together. But a self-giving love. What is unselfishness? When are we unselfish? Jesus spoke a lot about this, and there's seven texts that you're familiar with, they all say much the same paradox that was at the very center of Jesus' wisdom, Torah, the way that he presented of life, and the way it's often translated, anyone who wants to save or find his or her life is going to waste it. If you hold on to it, you're going to lose it. It's the one who wastes it, who lets it go, who spills it out, who gives it, you know. That's the one who's going to save it and find it. Now, he wants us to find it and save it. He's on about life. "What can a person give in exchange for life?" said Jesus. "I've come that you may live and live to the full." So Jesus is it on the Sabbath, is it good to give life or to destroy? Life is what Jesus is very interested in. But the way to life is not the way that I would think or you would think or we think when we get lost. We get lost when we start thinking we can give life to ourselves. Too inbred, it doesn't get anywhere. It doesn't help. Because you can't, you can only give what you've got. And the little bit of love you've got, if you give it to yourself, well, you're soon going to go around until you dry up, I presume. It's got to run out somewhere. So you've got to give it away in order to find it, said Jesus. And that's what he lived on the cross. Another way it's put by John, it's the same thing, but stark Aramaic expressions. If you love your own life, you're going to lose it. If you hate it in this world, you'll keep it forever. And by hate, he just means love, hate are too strong, and I don't want to weaken them, but it does mean comparative thing. You've got to love something a lot more than your own life. If that's your top priority, you're going to lose it, he says. And I think the loveliest text is in Luke, trying to get to the heart of Jesus' statement. They're all much the same. Luke 17:33, when Jesus says, I've translated it myself, trying to get it right, the feeling of the Greek imagery, anyone who tries to go around making his own life, making his own comfort, making his own decisions, doing his own thing, I don't know what word you... Anyone who goes around trying to organize life so that he'll manage to live is going to lose it. I don't have to convince you of that, and you don't have to convince me of it. Life teaches us that lesson. But here it is, Jesus saying it so clearly. But the one who loses it, gives it away, wastes it, empties it out, he'll be given life. He'll be given it. Well, he said it often, and had he just said it that often, we wouldn't have taken much notice. But what we're contemplating here together is the fact that he actually did it. He gave his life for people. He kept loving when it wasn't opportune or helpful or to him. But he kept doing it. He showed that centurion on the cross who couldn't dream of the possibility that death can't be all that bad. It's not the ultimate thing. That here's this person dying and giving his life. Same thing. Giving it freely. Loving right to the end. Caring right to the end. Praying right to the end. And it was very beautiful what that centurion saw. A complete statement of what Jesus had always done and always said, now ultimately said in the moment of his total gift of life. Selfishness is not love of self, is it? Jesus loved himself. He said to us, love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you don't love yourself, you can't love your neighbor. So it's nothing to do with not loving yourself. It can't be that. He was, do to others as you'd have them do to you, he said. And if you want people to keep putting you down, you can end up putting them down, don't you? You must love your own life. It's the most precious gift that God's given you. Your temperament, your personality, your gifts. You must be able to admire them. And not like Narcissus, but simply let the truth humbly come in. Because like Mary said, skipping over the fields, my soul magnifies the Lord because God has made me such a terrific lady, said Mary. So he's done such wonderful things for me. So she's really excited about all these wonderful things. And God has done wonderful things for all of us in the room or we wouldn't be here. So you've got all these lovely things that God has given each of us. And I don't know what floods your mind when I say that, but I hope something does. And it's true. And what a terrible thing it would be to forget that. And if we forget it, how do we ever love? So we need to love others as we love ourselves. But selfishness comes in when not loving myself, but self-interest at a lower level refuses to give way to the call of love. When love asks me to take a step and something else keeps me here, fear, self-interest, pettiness, not wanting to let something go like the rich young man, whatever it may be that holds me back, and we call it selfishness. We mean that we're kind of insecure in our own self, and so we're grappling for security in the wrong places, and love comes by and says, hey, and we don't hear, or we don't say yes, or we don't take the opportunity to just let it go, and so the water in our pond becomes stagnant, and it gets worse and worse, apparently, the way we go, and we get very lost. We selfish human beings. The second thing I want to just talk about, simply another quality that we see there as we watch Jesus die, is his fidelity. A simple statement. I don't know that it needs any dwelling on. The hour had come for him to pass from this world to the Father, and he'd always loved those who were his in the world, but now he showed how perfect his love was. He loved us to the end. Faithful love that kept loving through everything right up till that moment. and all love longs to be faithful.